Uncertainty isn't just a challenge, it's a call to adapt. At Tagoras, we help organizations navigate disruption with clarity and confidence. Whether it's making smarter decisions about your portfolio, understanding shifting market dynamics, or identifying new opportunities for growth, we bring deep experience in strategy, market assessment, and lifelong learning. If you're looking to build a more resilient, responsive learning business, we're here to help. Learn more at tagoras.com/clarity.
If the university is a beam of light that serves a very particular set of learners in a very particular way, the continuing education division refracts that expertise and refracts that knowledge and makes it accessible to the full spectrum of individuals who might need access to the institution at some point in time.
I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
There aren't many times that Pink Floyd comes up on a podcast focused on learning businesses. Fewer still are the times that such a mention makes a profound point about how higher education is seeking to respond to the needs of post-traditional students. But that's exactly what happens in this episode, which features a conversation with the astute Amrit Ahluwalia. Amrit is Executive Director of Continuing Studies at Western University in London, Ontario, Canada, and he'd been in that role about 6 months at the time he spoke with Jeff in early September 2024. Western University is one of Canada's U15, essentially the equivalent of an R1 institution in the U.S., and Amrit is focused on growing Western's professional and continuing education reputation and approach to match the reputation and approach the institution already brings to its research and undergraduate programming. Before joining Western, Amrit founded The Evolution, and he ran the publication for a little over 10 years. He also now hosts the EdUp PCO podcast, where he highlights innovation happening in professional, continuing, and online education. The podcast focuses on giving visibility to leaders in the space and covering topics such as AI, strategic planning, and more, all with a student-first philosophy. In this episode of the Leading Learning Podcast, number 433, Amrit and Jeff talk about the revenue imperative facing most professional continuing and online PCO education units, the need for the 60-year curriculum, collaboration between higher ed and associations, COVID's impact on learner expectations, the value for many businesses of moving beyond a content producer mentality to being a curator and a guide, and more.
Can you talk a little bit about the path that got you to Western?
Yeah, well, it's funny, in continuing education, we say that no one was 8 years old dreaming about being a continuing education leader. And certainly, I think, you know, we've all had kind of circuitous and unique routes to getting to where we are in this profession. I think mine has probably been both more streamlined and more random than many of my peers. So as you mentioned, I founded and ran a publication called The Evolution for a little over 10 years. It was a publication focused on transformation and change in the higher education space with a particular focus on continuing education. In fact, for those of you who don't know, who know the publication but never understood whether we just typoed it or whether that was intentional, the reason Evolution has three L's in it is for lifelong learning. The publication has a square focus on creating pathways to education for learners that aren't traditionally served by the institution. And that was our bread and butter for over a decade. And in that time, I had the opportunity to work with, frankly, thousands of leaders from colleges and universities across Canada, the United States, and around the world, all talking about their unique approaches to driving innovation in the post-secondary space, to what some of the key considerations and key challenges they were navigating, some of the really unique and mission-critical work that can happen in a division like Western Continuing Studies. And so my wife and I actually moved to London, Ontario in the middle of the pandemic. We were part of the exodus from Toronto that happened at that time. And Western University, as I mentioned, is located in London, Ontario. And they were looking for an executive director of continuing studies. And it felt like kismet, an opportunity to bring some of that knowledge, some of that expertise, some of that vision that I've been fortunate enough to have probably the best crash course in the world on how to run a continuing education division and bring that into practice here at Western. And so a lot of what our team is doing is applying the lessons that I've spent the last decade learning.
Well, and I'll note that the evolution carries on without you. It's still out there. So
yes, it does. Yes, it does. In the very capable hands of Shauna Cox, which she is just a tremendous leader. And I think the publication is richer for having her at its helm.
She's doing a great job. And for listeners who were not familiar with Evolution before this, I certainly very highly recommend checking that out, seeing what's going on now. And there's a huge backlog. And, you know, going back and seeing what your work was there, Amrit, and everybody who's participated and brought their voice to that publication. It's a very rich experience. But you're in a different setting now. You're sort of, okay, I guess, where the proverbial rubber meets the road, so to speak. So yeah. So how has your perspective on continuing education and professional development evolved? It's been 6 months, so not a long time, but I imagine you've got a little bit of a different perspective now.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a fascinating transition, you know, and peers and colleagues will laugh about this. But when I started, I thought, you know, starting on March 25th, 2024, I'll come in, we'll continue to do things as a status quo, I'll learn the ropes and then start to insert myself. And around that time, the Government of Canada released new regulations on international student enrollments. It basically executed a federally mandated cap that at the provincial level meant that the province was setting the number of international students every post-secondary institution can enroll. As many of my colleagues will know, international students have become something of a revenue lifeline for post-secondary institutions in Canada and certainly in Ontario. In Ontario, we've faced a tuition freeze that was executed in 2019. So certainly taking inflation into account, the public funding for post-secondary institutions in Ontario has gone down quite significantly. International students have been looked at as a pathway to maintain a steady and healthy margin. So when that international student cap came into place, effectively the role of continuing education division completely changed, which meant upon my start, we had to take a very close look at the way we were running things, take a look at reformatting and recalibrating the learners that we were bringing in and serving, and taking a very close look at the role we played in supporting our community and in supporting industry in and around our region. So instead of maybe having a few months to settle in and find the ropes and things like that, really day one was completely reinventing continuing education at Western University and finding ways to leverage what we had and finding ways to implement new models so that we could get fast and get larger as quickly as we could while still respecting the roots of what we do and who we are here to serve. So it's really been an interesting transition. I'd say the biggest shift in perspective for me has come from going from a place where I could operate very comfortably at 35,000 feet to now being at the ground level and not only having the vision of where we want to go, but working with the team to figure out how do we execute it. I'm very fortunate. I've got a phenomenal team of folks here at Western, both in institutional leadership and within the leadership team at Continuing Education, who can help to navigate some of the challenges that many of my colleagues have faced historically. There's a great deal of support and interest in finding ways for continuing education to be a more active player at Western University, and that's goes all the way up to the provost and the president. And so for us, it's really a matter of bringing that trust to life. And it's been a fascinating transition. I think the biggest shift from a corporate mindset to a public institutional mindset is maybe the pace of change. It can be a little slower to enact a shift than maybe what I'm used to.
Yeah, I bet. Well, I'd be interested to hear, because it's an area that we're focused on quite a bit now at Leading Learning in Tagoras, and I feel like it's just sort of a hot topic in general. How much has a focus on workforce development and maybe just sort of collaborating with and supporting industry, employers in general, factored into where you're going to be taking Western?
Yeah, I mean, it's so critical. I mean, ultimately, any professional continuing online education unit has to be responsive to industry needs. We need to be proactive in supporting talent pipeline management. We need to make talent pipeline management a clear part of corporate growth strategies. One thing that's unique about London, Ontario is, so it's the one of the fastest growing economic regions in Canada. We have a booming manufacturing sector specifically, but also quite a large computing sector, significant agri-food sectors. So there is rapid growth happening in a range of fields. And for us, it's really a matter of finding the connective tissue that will allow us to serve the largest number of employers and industries as we can while bringing our expertise to life. Now, we're also very fortunate here in London. We've got a phenomenal college in Fanshawe College that also serves this region. And between Western University, which, as I mentioned, is you know, a U15, basically the equivalent of an R1 institution in the US, and Fanshawe, which is a premier college. We have the ability to serve every level of the labor market or every level of the labor force with specialized and distinct focus. So it basically means we have the opportunity, if we're mindful about it, to create a talent pipeline strategy that should be effective in not only serving the industries and serving the businesses that are already here in London, but also in attracting new businesses to set up shop here. We have the capacity to pivot the booming population that we have in the region and to transition it into a really effective talent pipeline. So it's unique. It's about being responsive and proactive at the same time.
Yeah. And so, I mean, practically speaking, what does that look like? I mean, do you have business development people who are going out to meet with corporations? Are there task force across the region? Like, how are you aligning yourself with workforce and employer needs?
It's a great question. I would say right now we're bootstrapping a little bit. So there's some of the startup mentality that we had in launching the publications, some of the startup mentality that came from the tech sector, my background, that we're now applying to the way that we operate in continuing education. At the same time, we're fortunate to be supported by some incredible organizations. So in particular, the London Economic Development Corporation, or the LEDC, is the business hub for our community. And they're incredibly active in promoting London as a place to do business. And so they're really active in working with us to give us a clear sense of what the talent pipeline gaps are and to helping us identify what are some of the areas where our programming needs to evolve to be responsive to the largest number of industry members as possible. They also have been instrumental in facilitating introductions to industry-specific organizations to help us dive deeper into the work that we can do to be of greater support to the businesses in our community. And so it's relational at its core. And I think one thing that's really important about the higher education space that has been a lovely consistency from the technology world and from the publication world is that everything is relational. You know, at the end of the day, it's people working with people to help people. So if you approach it like a robot, you're not going to get very far. But if you approach it like a person and are honest about what you're trying to achieve and some of the obstacles in your way and want to have an honest conversation about what industry needs and what some of their challenges are, it's not a question of an institution to industry partnership. It's a question of two people having an honest conversation about where their strengths are and where their weaknesses are and how those things can come together to form something greater than the sum of its parts. So I think we're really fortunate that we've been able to go on a bit of a listening tour, that we have organizations like the LEDC supporting us and supporting our capacity to be responsive and proactive to the needs of industry. And the reality of it is, it's also a mentality shift as to what continuing education is. I think at many institutions, and we're no exception, continuing education has historically operated in a bit of a silo. It's been a space for experimentation. It's been a space for skunk works. But given that mentality and given that focus, it's historically operated really of its own accord off to the side. And the way I see continuing education is more of Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon album cover. Bear with me.
Yeah, all right. So, I will.
Yeah, you weren't expecting that. And it's funny because any colleagues of mine, certainly at Western, who are hearing this interview will have heard me give this example about 700 times. So if the university is a beam of light that serves a very particular set of learners in a very particular way, the continuing education division refracts that expertise and refracts that knowledge and makes it accessible to the full spectrum of individuals who might need access to the institution at some point in time. So that's my mental image of what continuing education is here to do, where we almost serve as a relational hub, as extending the reach of institutional research and extending the reach of institutional faculty to make that learning applicable and to make that knowledge practical to folks in our service region to make sure that we're making Western as accessible as we can. So that's really that mentality shift around what we're here to do makes itself seen in our business model, makes itself seen in our program catalog, and hopefully makes itself seen in the quality of offerings that we're bringing to market.
At Tagoras, we partner with professional and trade associations, continuing education units, training firms, and other learning businesses to help them to understand market realities and potential, to connect better with existing customers and find new ones, and to make smart investment decisions around product development and portfolio management. Drawing on our expertise in lifelong learning, market assessment, and strategy formulation, we can help you achieve greater reach, revenue, and impact. Learn more at Zagoras.com/more.
And I feel like, as I've watched it, that the sort of the role of continuing education or professional continuing online education within universities has really has been elevated quite a bit over, say, the last decade or so, to the extent that maybe more funding is going towards it, more attention is being paid to it, maybe a little more respect is being paid towards that function within universities. Does that jibe with your experience?
Yes and no. I'm not sure on the funding side necessarily, but I think there's more respect for the business model of continuing education than there has historically. Continuing education divisions are at minimum cost recovery units and are increasingly revenue generating units. And once upon a time, I think this created maybe a bit of a cultural gap between the continuing education unit and its staff and the rest of the institution. But as revenue issues and revenue challenges have really brought themselves more to the forefront of university operations in Canada and the US, probably over the past 3 to 4 years, I think the understanding of the work that continuing education divisions do to balance an access mission with a revenue generation expectation is greatly respected. So I don't know necessarily that more funding is coming our way, but I think there's more space that allows us to operate the way we need to operate to be effective within the bounds of what's been set up for us.
Yeah, and I think that's a good distinction because obviously, yes, continuing education units typically are going to have to be revenue generating, so they're not necessarily looking for funding per se. They are self-funding, but I think that ability to self-fund has probably grown as the focus
Absolutely.
On lifelong learning has grown.
The reality of the labor market that we have today necessitates continuing education as a foundational principle of any post-secondary institution. The work we do is critical to maintaining a healthy and a knowledgeable workforce. And I think part of the challenge we've had historically as a sector is that people really have bought into the idea that once you earn a degree, you're done. And that the relationship between the institution and the learner after that degree is conferred is either a purely academic track where you want to get a graduate degree for the purpose of effectively workforce training for the academy, or you want to come back every 5 years and get blackout while watching a football game. And I think there's a common understanding now that the relationship between the learner and the institution needs to be value-based. And our value primarily is as a provider of learning experiences and a provider of intellectual growth. So our role in providing that the conduit to that intellectual growth has become increasingly important. And this is the foundation of the principle of the 60-year curriculum, which is the idea that, you know, if an individual is going to come back to an institution for a lifelong experience, we can't just be reactive and responsive. We need to be proactive in ensuring that individuals are seeing the right learning opportunities at the right time that are designed to help them achieve the goals that they're starting to unearth for themselves.
Well, and that's a great segue back a little bit towards that industry workforce question that I had, because you just referenced the 60-year curriculum and this sort of like staying with learners throughout their lives and their careers. We do a lot of work in the trade and professional association world. Traditionally, that has been their domain. Like somebody joins a trade and professional association because they're in a career and they're going to sort of, you know, use that organization as a vehicle throughout their career. So I think there's possibly a little bit of a tension there between universities now potentially playing that role, what the associations have traditionally played. But I think there's also really fertile ground for collaboration, particularly when you're talking about serving an industry or a profession where you've got the association for that profession collaborating with a university that has the intellectual firepower behind it. Are you seeing collaboration happen between associations and academia?
Absolutely. 100%. Because the reality of it is no one can be everything to everyone. I mentioned earlier that how happy I am that we've got such a great college in our community. The reality of it is there's a fair amount of training for the manufacturing industry that we're simply not set up to do. But at the same time, there's a fair amount of training and development that needs to happen for folks that are progressing in their career that the college might not be as well set up to support as we are. And so within our post-secondary field, we're recognizing that we've got roles to play. And I think this extends as well to the world of professional associations. Now, I will be the first to admit, and my colleagues who are part of trade and professional associations that I've spoken to will back me up on the fact that I will admit this freely. our industry has not been great at partnering with trade and professional associations in the past. We have not been responsive. We haven't been reactive. We really believed that our role in educating people happens right at the start of their career. And so for professional and trade associations, they've had no choice but to pivot to serving as the training provider and training facilitator and best practice hub and relational hub for their industries. Fortunately, we have sort of a new wave of leader coming into the post-secondary space who recognizes increasingly the role that post-secondary institutions need to play in the practical delivery of high-value learning experiences for folks to progress in their careers. And so I'm here to say that you don't necessarily have to be everything to everyone if you don't want to be. Now, if the role of the association in the realm of any given association is to be the provider of training, fantastic. That's great. And that's going to be tailored and it's going to be high quality and it's going to be based in years of experience. And that's tremendous. But if an association feels that they would rather be a relational hub and a best practice hub, and they would rather serve as a conduit of learning needs to a learning provider, as an industry, I would say we are starting to come out of the dark and recognize our responsibility in delivering that. So I think that's where we're starting to pivot to. And I'm finding that colleagues in professional and trade associations are starting to see the value in that approach of position the university as a partner for your members' growth strategies. One thing I think that's becoming increasingly common that we're talking about more and more with folks across industries is as companies scale and grow, you have folks that have worked on a shop floor or worked for years, for decades potentially, who are now in leadership positions. Have they been trained in how to lead people? Do they know how to read a budget? Do they know how to manage performance issues? Do they know how to, are they OSHA certified? These are the kinds of things that partnering with a post-secondary institution can help to bridge those gaps and facilitate that scale. So really, I think as the association evolves its role into a relational hub between the higher ed industry and the professional and trade communities that they represent, there's an opportunity for us all to be a little bit better at doing the things we're supposed to be doing, while at the same time facilitating scale and growth that can be really challenging when you're doing all things for all people.
Yeah, I think that scale question is certainly an important one. I think the confidence, the authority, and whatever the educational experience is, I think is increasingly important. And both sides can, sort of make them sound like they're opposing, but both parties involved can, you know, help each other with that. Because it seems to me, or it's been clear to us in much of the work that we're doing and a lot of the market research we're doing, so I'd be interested to know what you're seeing, that as continuing education has evolved, as the demand for and need for lifelong learning has evolved, that both the learners and the employers have higher expectations than they used to. You've referenced value before. Like, it takes time and it takes money to invest in these educational experiences, and they want to know that it's actually had an impact, that it's actually moved the dial, that it's done something for them. What are you hearing or seeing along those lines?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, the reality of it is that the adult learner is a unique individual and a very challenging individual to serve if you're not set up to do it. These are individuals that have significant competing priorities for their time and energy and attention. They're folks that are very aware of the importance of job security and job progression, but at the same time, they have extremely high standards for digital experience and service. And I think this is historically where post-secondary institutions may have maybe missed the mark on serving adults in the past, is there's this sort of belief that the experience that we provide for an 18-year-old historically should be good enough for an adult, where the reality is that an adult's not going to line up or wait in a queue to register for something, because their perspective is, if I'm giving you the money, why do I have to line up to do that? They really think and act like consumers. And so for continuing education divisions, we specialize in serving learners as customers, while at the same time ensuring that their educational experience is meeting the mark of an educational experience. We have to compartmentalize the customer experience and the student experience. And we have to ensure both those things operate at as high a quality as possible. And the learning experience as well has to be foundationally different. The principles of andragogy, which is the education of adults, is completely different than the principles of pedagogy, which frankly is the principles of educating children. So the way that we approach the learning experience, the way that we construct a learning experience, the way that we facilitate communication and collaboration, not just between learners, but also between learners and their instructors, is totally different. And that's really intentional. We're adopting more seamless online experiences. We're adopting shorter stackable courses. And that's because these are things that meet the needs of an adult learner who has very limited time at their disposal and extremely high expectations for distinct outcomes that they're expecting to achieve. So I'd say this is realistically where, as a continuing studies division here at Western University, but broadly as an industry segment, where continuing professional, continuing and online education divisions have a unique role to play, which is if more and more adults are going to be pursuing learning experiences so that they can progress their careers, so that they can keep up with the pace of change that's happening in their industries, we're poised and ready to serve those individuals, and we have a mandate to do so.
Where would you say we are with digital learning experiences at this point? I mean, obviously, online's been around for a long time. It got a huge boost because of COVID, and you know, yeah. People who didn't want to go online suddenly had to. But I think there's still a little bit of a sense out there that maybe online isn't completely living up to its promise in terms of what the experience is like, what the quality is like. What's your perspective on it?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think if it's intentionally designed, you won't run into those issues. The biggest problem, and this is something we covered on The Evolution, actually, very shortly after the pandemic hit, we kind of pivoted our entire editorial calendar to content related to adapting to the closures, adapting to COVID, adapting to the need for online learning. And very early on in that series, a leader named Sasha Thackaberry, who's now, at the time, I believe she was at LSU, and she's now leading a company affiliated with D2L called SkillsWave. But at the time, she was leading online continuing education at LSU. And she said, "What? Be careful, because what we're doing right now is not online education, it's remote learning. And if we tell people that this emergency remote education is akin to distance and online learning in terms of quality and in terms of product and in terms of focus, we're going to do ourselves a disservice." And frankly, that's largely what happened. We had a lot of people taking their first, what they felt was an online learning experience that did not facilitate peer-to-peer interaction, did not facilitate peer-to-instructor interaction, was just a lecture on Zoom. And their feeling was that that was what online learning was. The reality of it is that's not what online learning is at all. And so more people experienced the capacity for flexible on your schedule, in your location of choice learning, which is fantastic. And I think it opened the door to people to maybe be more curious about whether they could stack an online learning experience into their lives or stack an online learning experience into their degree program. But the experience of a Zoom lecture is not an online learning experience. And I think we as an industry have a bridge to cross on that topic in terms of highlighting to folks what online learning really is. It's something I'm actually particularly concerned about as younger audiences progress to college and beyond, who maybe were in grade 5 or 6 or 7 with the shift to online learning, or rather with the shift to remote learning. And as they enter college and as they enter their careers, hopefully will not feel threatened or feel frustrated by the potential of online learning because of their experience through COVID. But I can fully understand that might be a hill we have to climb with that demographic.
And of course, we've gotten into technology, so I have to ask about artificial intelligence. Cannot ask about that. What's your perspective both on, certainly it will change the delivery and the experience of learning, so I'd love your perspective on that, but also just the need for learning, like what we're going to need to learn, how we're going to need to learn. Like, what's your thinking about AI at this point?
Look, I mean, technology is completely reshaping every component of every industry. And I think generative AI and the sort of rapid advances in machine learning are only going to contribute to that. So McKinsey, I think this was a report from years ago, I think 2017 or 2018, that's been recently refreshed. But their expectation was that by 2030, about 30% of working tasks would be able to be automated with existing technology. Now, that's not jobs. And I think this is where the automation train really freaks people out. We're not saying 30% of jobs won't exist by 2030. We're saying 30% of working tasks won't exist by 2030 because they'll be automated. That means suddenly you have 30% more time to be a human. right? So the challenge is, I think there's a fair number of jobs where quite about 30% of the focus is manual and repeatable tasks, highly manual, highly repeatable, highly automatable tasks that take a third of every day. And as those things become automated, the question becomes, how do you fill that 30% of your week? So I think where we start to think about the value of a professional continuing online education, where we think about the value of a learning experience, it's really in how do we become more human? How do we make sure that our human skills are front and center for the purpose of doing more human-specific work in the era where 30% of our tasks are automated? In terms of what that translates to, I mean, prompts is a really easy place to start. Digital media literacy, really important. I think when we think about a lot of the skills that are going to be necessary for humans in a digital era, we're talking about a lot of the things that are core to a liberal arts curriculum, if I'm totally honest. Synthesis, the ability to analyze, the ability to criticize, the ability to communicate effectively. These things are core to our capacity to be human. And I think those topics are going to become more and more important, frankly, as we go forward. Now, from the post-secondary side, we have a bit of a challenge on keeping pace. Now, not in terms of the development of durable skills. We arguably have been building and shaping durable skills in learners for over a millennium. We're pretty good on that. But when it comes to how do we keep curricula at the pace of technological change, I think there's a philosophical shift that we have to enact there. Because there's a core principle here around, again, the 60-year curriculum, which is having a more concrete sense of where the institution has expertise and where the institution needs to partner for expertise, right? In this new era, the university is not a gatekeeper of knowledge. And as the online world, as digital access to information widens and widens, our ability to make our bread and butter off gatekeeping access to knowledge will reduce because knowledge in and of itself is highly accessible. So then there's a question of contextualizing knowledge. There's a question of verifying and validating knowledge. There's a question of curating knowledge. And all of a sudden, our role starts to evolve from being a place where knowledge is formed and knowledge is transferred to a place where knowledge is contextualized. And our role shifts to that of a guide through the world of knowledge. So I think we have a responsibility to sort of orient ourselves away from exclusively the delivery of content to more learner relationship management. How do we understand the learner's needs? How do we understand the needs of the learner in the context of a changing labor market? And how do we facilitate access to the right learning experience at the right time that's going to allow them to build the skills and the knowledge and the competency that they need to be successful in the thing that they want to succeed in? And that's a very different job. It's a very different job. But to a certain extent, it's incumbent upon us to find the right partners who can maybe offer the series of courses or the series of programming that they're able to keep pace with because that's their specialty, and ensuring that that learner has an appropriate experience and ourselves going through and validating the quality of the offering itself. This isn't a white labeling, hands-off experience, but our role can't be recreating the wheel. Our role instead needs to be being a car. Right. So we'll allow the wheels already exist. We're just going to put them together in a very unique way to provide the learner the experience they need. And some of that might be stuff that we develop internally, but some of it might be creating access to things that we didn't create, but that we believe in.
Just in terms of your own lifelong learning, continuing education, how do you approach that? What are kind of your habits and practices that keep you on the top of your game in life and work?
Well, you're making an assumption that I'm anywhere near the top of my game, but I'll take it. First and foremost, I do believe in informal learning, which seems ironic, but I spend a huge amount of time learning from my mentors. I'm very fortunate to have a really passionate and supportive group of leaders who seem to care about what happens with my career and seem willing to give me advice. I'm an active member of our industry association. So kind of going back to the comment earlier about the role of industry associations and sharing best practice and creating avenues for professionals to learn and to grow, specifically OPSIA, which was formerly known as the University Professional and Continuing Education Association. And here in Canada, we also have an association called CAUS, which is the Canadian Association for University Continuing Education. I'm incredibly passionate, incredibly fortunate, rather, to be surrounded by passionate colleagues who believe in our work and who are willing to share best practice and share experiences. And for more sort of more formal, more technical learning, I think it's really a matter of finding the right learning experience for the thing that I'm trying to solve. So I tend to be, you know, as any consumer, I identify kind of a broad challenge that I'm trying to fix and then take both informal and formal approaches to bridging that gap. And some of those might be chatting with folks about the problem I'm having and then distilling that problem into maybe a set of skills and a set of culture shifts, and then trying to practice executing the culture shifts with the feedback that I've been given, and then looking for the right learning experience for me to tackle the skill gap. So far, that's worked for me relatively well.
Amrit Ahluwalia is the Executive Director of Continuing Studies at Western University, host of the podcast EdUp PCO, and founder of The Evolution. In the show notes at leadinglearning.com/episode433, you'll find a link to Continuing Studies at Western University, The Evolution, and EdUp PCO, as well as a link to Amrit's profile on LinkedIn.
At leadinglearning.com/episode433, you'll also find options for subscribing to the podcast. We'd be grateful if you would subscribe if you haven't yet, as subscriptions give us some insight into the impact of the podcast.
We'd also be grateful if you would rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, especially if you find the Leading Learning podcast valuable. Those ratings and reviews help us show up when people search for content on leading a learning business.
And please help us grow the Leading Learning community. At leadinglearning.com/episode433, there's a link to find us on LinkedIn.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning podcast.